I'm Amy, sex educator, sex and relationship coach, and co-owner of PurePleasureShop.com.
And I'm April, sex toy maven, VP of Hot Octopus, and I've dedicated my life to the business of sex. We're two people with a passion for educating and inspiring shame-free conversations about sex and relationships.
Welcome to the Shameless Sex Revolution. Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com. And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use coupon code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.
You are listening to a pleasure podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Shameless Sex Podcast. This is another bonus episode for you. If you're new to Shameless Sex, we release episodes every Tuesday, and sometimes we do a free episode on a Friday, like once a month. We kind of aim for that, and it's ad-free. Well, first of all, why do we have ads? Because, well, it's not cheap to run a podcast, and we dedicate so much of our life to it. So just so you know, if you listen to our other episodes and you hear ads, we are very particular about our sponsors. We only choose sponsors that we absolutely love and we believe in. We try all the products. So yes, there's that. And then, but sometimes I know you just want to like get a free gift and listen to something without ads. So that's what we're doing today. Trigger warning for people. I don't even know what the topic of this will be called in the headline. So maybe you already know, maybe you already read a little bit about what this episode is about. And if you didn't, trigger warning, if abortion is something that, brings up feelings for you, maybe it's personal, maybe you have opinions about abortion or birth control, and so we are going to be discussing not necessarily like, you know, how abortion works when you're in the clinic. Maybe you are. Who knows? But we're talking about resources to, you know, having rights to your body and to your reproductive choices. So we are here today with Amy. It's Merrill, right? Merrill. Okay. Amy Merrill. It's Amy squared today. Two Amys. No April. We would have been the AAA team. Ooh. but yes, sometimes April is busy. So it would just be myself and Amy Merrill. Amy, can you start by sharing a little bit about you know, who you are and how you got into this field? I usually would say the field of sexuality, but I guess we're calling it like reproductive rights or women's rights, or yeah. Will you define that more for us?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. Such a pleasure to be here. And
yeah, in person too.
I know, yeah. An in-person recording, very exciting. And yes, I came to this work through a nonprofit career where I started out by getting drawn to working in the arts and then ultimately found that the social justice elements of the arts were the most compelling to me, meaning like the ways that people interact with industries around the arts. And pretty quickly after that, I found gender equity issues, reproductive health issues as a part of this bigger conversation about how does gender show up in society, in the US, internationally, what the heck is going on when things end up being not equal between different genders and ways that people are treated or have access to things like basic healthcare. So I just found myself being drawn over and over to this issue and issues similar to it because it felt so unsolved, unresolved, and yet it felt very fundamental to how we get to operate in the world, what I value in terms of how I operate in the world, and what can we do to make things a little bit better for the next generation.
Yeah. So can you, I was looking up, so Plan C, most people know, they know a Plan B. So, and maybe you can describe, actually, I remember seeing something online. It was like on Instagram, and someone was interviewing, I think it was like men passing by in the street, like, do you know what Plan B is? And they were talking about all these different ways of like, how does it work? And so, but you're, so yeah, yeah, before I describe more about what you do, will you explain more about how Plan C is different from Plan B?
Absolutely. That's a great place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Plan B is also called the morning after pill. It's what someone can take within 72 hours after having sex, having unprotected sex, or if there's a concern that the birth control failed, you can take a Plan B. And Plan C is our term for what's also called medication abortion or abortion pills. So this is a different medication. It's a combination of actually two meds, mifepristone and misoprostol, and you can take it up to 12 weeks. There's a few different opinions over the protocol, but under basic WHO, World Health Organization protocol, is up to 12 weeks you can take it and be safe. And that's both within medical settings and in more self-managed settings, which I'm sure we'll talk about today.
Yeah. And so with Plan C, and I was looking at the website or the link that you sent me. So this is the direction or the intention is to make it so people, it can be mail order, right? You can just get it in, especially in the states where you don't have Planned Parenthoods and things like that. So is that currently available then? People can already do that?
It is. Okay. Yeah, that's the real impetus for our campaign, for our initiative, was recognizing that not only is this medication safe and effective and that millions of people around the world are already accessing it every year to self-manage, it's what's called a medication abortion in a Planned Parenthood here in the U.S. So for decades, people have been accessing it through clinics and provider settings. And in the last 5-6 years, we started to recognize that there were all of these sites and services popping up online to mail people pills. Mm-hmm. And again, that was something that was already common.
Like not just abortion pills. We're talking about like Viagra and stuff, right?
There's
like,
is
see
that
those
too.
Popping up. Okay, you're talking about, okay, yeah.
It started out in that way. In 2017, we started to see some of these sites that are like e-commerce sites for pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. They sell Viagra. They sell all sorts of meds. Some people go to those sites just to get their meds, yeah. right? Because medications are so expensive in the States. So we started to recognize that some of those sites or independent sites that were just dedicated to abortion pills were popping up to sell and mail pills. And we thought that was fascinating because my co-founders were from a public health research background where, again, they were actually on the team to bring Plan B over the counter the 90s. Yeah,
Okay.
So they worked on that. They also made sure that it was not prescription only. It was when it was first launched, it was going to be you had to get a prescription from a doctor, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, now you can go. Yeah, exactly. Why would that even be helpful? Your doctor's like, here, yeah, you should do this. You're like, here's a prescription for that.
You're like, it's
and you don't have time.
Morning.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to wait till Monday to get my morning after pill. That doesn't make sense.
That's not helpful.
Yeah. So these women that I work with are trailblazers. They were very forward thinking. Even at that time, they said, again, this medication is so safe and effective. It should be in people's hands. Fast forward till today, you can get Plan B on Amazon Prime and all sorts of other places.
I mean, I see at the drug, like CVS behind the counter, not behind the counter, like you don't have to have a prescription, but I can see it. You still have to ask them though, like, can I get the Plan B?
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, maybe in some places it's just, but it's always seems like to me, it's the thing that you have to ask behind the counter, like a COVID test.
Right. Which I feel like is more wrapped up in like the stigma and the barriers to, you know, reproductive.
Yeah. Like why wouldn't it just be on the shelf? It was like, kids aren't going to take it and like pop it like candy. I don't think it's fun. Right?
It's, you could argue or you could kind of pull the thread and see maybe there's something around control.
Totally.
Yeah. But I did read that at an Olivia Rodrigo concert last week, reproductive health organizations were passing out Plan B to participants, which is awesome.
Yeah. Why not? If you don't need it for yourself, I'm sure maybe someone else in your life does.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that's really wise. So for me, so personally, I think I've talked about this in the podcast. I definitely have many times. And I think in our first episode, Shame Sex, episode number one, we were, April and I were outing like some of our, what people would perceive as shame and is probably shameful for a lot of other folks. For me, having an abortion when I was, how old was I? Anyways, 2016 is all I know. Wasn't a shameful thing, but I wasn't raised with, you know, I was raised in Santa Cruz, although I'm plenty of people live raised in Santa Cruz, you know, have shame about having abortions. In fact, I found out like when I shared that very openly with people that I had an abortion, all of a sudden I had all these people that I had no idea had an abortion. They're like, me too. They whisper it to me like, I had one too. I'm like, wait, why are you whispering? but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I get it. So for me, when I was, whatever age I was in 2016, I had an IUD, I had a copper IUD. I was in year 9 of having the copper IUD. And I think you can have it for 12 years. And then I got pregnant with, my ex-partner who I was with for like 5.5 years, a very, very rocky, tumultuous relationship. First of all, I was someone who actually never wanted kids. It was just, has never been a thing for me. And I've always been on some form of birth control or like my current partner has a vasectomy. So, I've always been very responsible with that, with my own health. But shit still happened, right? I was part of the 1% who got pregnant on the copper IUD while my partner who, I have a lot of trauma around, was in the process of like falling in love with another woman, telling me that he was going to leave me for this other woman because she is a better fit for him. Of course, it happens during that time. And I was like, oh my God, the universe, what's happening? The one time I get pregnant. And so I knew right when I got pregnant, I was going to have an abortion. That was not even a question. I didn't even think for a second. It was just like, this, I already knew this. And I already knew this as a sexually active person who doesn't want to have kids, that if I did get pregnant, that that would be something that I would do. I couldn't have an abortion right away, though. I couldn't even get the pill form, not because it wasn't available, but it wasn't available in, that I know of, in this way where I could have, like, you know, ordered it. Yeah. I would still have to go into Planned Parenthood or your doctor or whatever and do this whole process. But my IUD was still in, so you have to get that taken out before, because when you're taking the abortion pill, your body's doing contract. It's very dangerous if you have an IUD in there or some copper. But my IUD was so far in my uterus that the string wasn't out, and so I couldn't even do that. Anyways, I had to go in and have them take out the IUD, so dilate my cervix or however they do it, pull out the IUD, and then I had to do the in-clinic abortion, which, you know, it's not fun. It's not pleasant. You know, I definitely would have done the pill form if I didn't have this IUD thing there. But anyways, I was super grateful for it. And I very rarely get people that criticize me. I've had a couple of people like trolling on my Instagram, and they're like, you know, anti-abortion people, and they just get deleted. So it wasn't like this. Yeah. It wasn't this big shameful thing. I just like to talk about it openly for other people who have lots of feelings about it. But anyways, I was grateful to have that access, though. If I had had a child with that person, we wouldn't be together, by the way, obviously, with what was happening during that time and what happened in all of our relationship was a shit show. And that child would have been raised with a lot of dysfunction based on, I would say, between my relationship with him, but also, like, I don't want him to be the father of, like, my children or children in general. But anyways, that's my opinion. Anyways, that's just me. So that's my experience with, so I've never taken the pill form of it. I understand. So you take the pill forms, because I want to get an understanding of, like, because you're saying it's the same if you go into a clinic, same pill if you did it at home too. Mm-hmm. So if someone was just to take it at home by themselves, like, what's the protocol? Is there any dangers around that? Or what does that look like?
Yeah. So this is, first of all, thank you so much for sharing your story. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing it in your work. And also here, it's always so helpful to humanize this thing that has become so political, has become so headline-y, newsy, that this is your story. It's wrapped up with you and your life experience too. And so many people, like you mentioned, that, you know, it's the stat is technically, I think it's 1 in 4 have had an abortion, but we actually think it's absolutely 1 in 3 and likely even higher when you count in all of the medical reasons that someone might need to end a pregnancy. And, you know, it's just such a continuum of needs on that reproductive spectrum, I would say. So the reality is that over the last couple years, an incredible array of services have popped up as telehealth, as mailed pills, plus what they call asynchronous support or text hotlines. There's all of these different things that are popping up in response to the crisis of access. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a remarkable situation where all of a sudden this thing has cracked open. And obviously it's so problematic. It's so harmful for so many people, especially folks that are marginalized because of their identity or their situation, socioeconomic status, race, gender, et cetera. It's more deeply impactful on those folks. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have to keep pushing on the policy front. And that's why Plan C is sharing information about all of these different avenues of access that people can get to right now, mm-hmm. and information on what's considered safe, self-managed abortion. Mm-hmm. So how I like to speak to it is that in the last couple decades, I haven't had a medication abortion either, to be totally honest. I come to this work because I, again, saw the need. I was so compelled by the transformative nature of this pill, of this method, and what it could do for folks who need access across the U.S. And so we share information from a public health perspective. We really ground it in that global international context that people have been doing this for decades, and they've been doing it in very self-managed settings. And the reality of a Planned Parenthood medication abortion is that you are taken in by a provider, you go through an intake, you are make sure that you aren't flagging for any kind of preconditions, of which there are very few, but mm-hmm. obviously you need to know that this is a good fit for you. You're given the pill. Sometimes you take the pill in person. You're sent home to watch your symptoms, and you take the next round, the the misoprostol, 24 to 48 hours later on your own. Mm-hmm. And so there was so much about that medication abortion that was already largely self-managed. Yep. You had to be in touch with your body. You had to know how to watch your symptoms. And you got to ask any questions of the provider. But it was usually a very brief kind of interaction. And it was something that providers and activists saw could be supported very well in self-managed settings. That now there are hotlines, there are online guides, FAQs, there's videos, there's Reddit communities. There's just so many ways that people are getting up to speed on how to use the method. And what I find inspiring about that, it's both a practical solution to the myriad of bans and blocks to care that are happening across this country because of politics and courts and judges, but it's also kind of a symbol of rebellion, of taking it back, of saying, you can't take this from me. Yeah. I am in my body. Something like reproductive care and ending a pregnancy has been something that was managed by the witches, the doulas, the grandmothers forever, right? So you can't take it away from us. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep it. And the way, a big way that we're going to keep it is by access to these pills. Mm-hmm. So it's both kind of like it's a reframing of what an abortion is and who gets to have one or who gives one. Mm-hmm. And it's also a practical tool for people to know how to do this on their own and know that it can be highly safe and effective.
Yeah. Yeah. The people that I've talked to have done medicated. Is that what you call it? Medicaid or
medication?
Medication abortion.
Okay. Or abortion pills.
Okay. Abortion pills. Yeah.
The way that we.
Okay. Said. Yeah. Either. So they have done that. Went into Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. They go home with, and I think they did the one pill there and then a pill on home. And they did say that there was like a number of hours that were like not pleasant. Yep. And your body is like contracting a bunch of super, it's pushing out whatever is in there on the uterine lining, is my guess. Okay. And that's not fun. Neither is the, in clinic, but there's plenty of things that women are doing that are not fun, but we have to do for our health, or just people are doing. And then I think after, they still need to go into the clinic though to double check to make sure everything has moved out of the body. Is that still, that would be the same with this too, with the pill form in the mail? No.
It depends. Okay. Most people don't need any kind of final visitor follow-up care.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The important part is to take a pregnancy test a few weeks later and make sure that you're not pregnant. Mm-hmm. But, and there is, like you're saying, I think it's important to acknowledge the chance of pain, discomfort, the kind of intense nature. I think that we do ourselves and our community a disservice if we don't speak to that. I feel like honestly that's part of the kind of shame game, is like, not only are we not talking about our experiences, we're also not talking about all the messy, complicated parts of these experiences.
And then when it happens, we were like, what the fuck?
Exactly.
You know, this is what I thought it would be. You're like,
it's
oh,
more
yeah,
isolated.
Let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if we talk about it, we say, yeah, I can't tell you what you're going to experience because everyone's experience is different. Mm-hmm. Some people say they have a heavy period. Some people have 1 to 2 weeks of discomfort. And sometimes the occasional time people do have to go and have a DNC and clear it out. And, you know, unfortunately, there's no perfect solution. These are all just, you know, solutions that are in service of people being well, people having autonomy, and thank goodness that we have these tools, these health tools like abortion pills and like the organizations that are still working to get people support, even if they are living in a state with bans, meaning there's still incredible activist providers at clinics. There's still
in states that have bans.
Yeah.
Like what would be an example of that? Like a state there were that, or I guess also what states is it currently banned? And I know that there's different levels of when it's banned, but it's like,
I think 15 states have bans, more than 20 states have restrictions of some kind. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much half the country, and it's the half that has higher maternal mortality rates, the half that has less support for, definitely no childcare, less support for, you know, infrastructure and family well-being in general. So unfortunately it tracks with a lot of those other conditions that people are up against, and again, it's impacting the families. But yes, the bans are largely targeting the in-person care. Okay. Bans are
not so not the pills necessarily as much.
It's a little complicated, and I always like to start by saying I'm not a lawyer, but we talk to a lot of lawyers at Plan C, and our understanding of the legal landscape is that basically the vast majority of states, all but one state, meaning 49 states do not have bans against self-managing an abortion. So the ban is not against.
What's the state that does?
It's
like Arkansas or something.
North Carolina, but I think it's only after 22 weeks.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So, which is, you know, late. And it's another kind of fallacy that the religious or conservative right likes to lean on, kind of the late stage visuals and terminology. But most people, if they know they don't want to be pregnant, are going to deal with it as soon as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And so the harmful part is when clinics close, when misinformation is out there and people actually can't get to the resources in time, then they get delayed in their care and it gets later and later. So in those states, what we know people are doing is that they're still getting in their car and driving across state lines. They're going online. They're searching, how can I get an abortion in my state? Mm-hmm. They're searching, how can I get abortion pills? And we want people to know as part of that initial search that you can get pills by mail in every state. Mm-hmm. And then you can learn all the context you need to know about how to be medically safe, how to be legally safe. There's incredible hotlines out there that are working day and night to answer anyone's questions and help them not feel alone.
Yeah. So yeah, if I'm, you know, at home having my own experience with the, or it's, that's a way to put it, my own experience, but I'm doing a medicated abortion at home and I'm like, I'm freaking out. Like, what's going on? Or this really hurts, or I need help. I can call a hotline and get that support, which we can't always do with our doctor, right? Like, you want to call your doctor, but like, I want to call my doctor all the time. Actually, I have a couple doctors I can text, but not a lot of people don't have that. You know, I'm like, what's this rash on my knee? And so, yeah, a lot of people don't. So if I live, like, let's say I live in, I don't know, Arkansas, in the, like, a town of 1,000 people. I have, like, no money. I, you know, and I don't have, there's no clinics there. I don't have access to, I don't have the financial means to start with, and I also don't have access to clinics there. What does it look like for me to get Plan C, like, in terms of the process, the costs? Like, what is that like?
Yep. So the Plan C Guide to Pills is our website. Mm-hmm. PlanCpills.org is where we host all of this research, all the things that we've collected, and we list them all in one place so that we can help inform someone's decision. So again, the hope is that they would find a resource like Plan C as they are sitting there with their decision in the circumstance that you described. And if you go on the Plan C website, you'll see that you can pick your state. And on that drop down, you'll see all of your options. Right now, there are three what we call alternate routes of access to pills in a state like Arkansas. There are providers that are actually mailing over state lines into restricted states from permissive states. Mm-hmm. They're protected under what's called shield laws, which just came into place the last year or so. It's pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's basically the first of its kind, but these six states have passed shield laws so that providers can be mailing pills into restricted states under their medical oath to provide the best care that they can to patients and under a lot of like provisions for how they, you know, would be protected if something happened legally. The patient also has no increased legal risk by using these services, according to the lawyers. So the first option is get pills mailed to you by a telehealth provider based in the U.S.
Okay.
And that's going to be 1 to 5 day ship time with sliding scale cost of $250 and down. And you can basically get it almost all the way down if you have no money.
Oh, wow.
The next option is called community networks. These are networks of volunteers who are mailing pills into states with restrictions. They're doing it for free. And it's a very activist model. It's based on things that have happened for decades in other countries. Like in Mexico, there's a group called Las Libres that has been serving women and people in need of abortion for decades now. They did it for 20 years. Now Mexico has decriminalized abortion. My understanding is they basically looked at the landscape and they went, well, we don't have control over this anyway, so I guess we're going to stop trying to criminalize it.
Yeah.
So Las Libres is now actually mailing pills into the U.S. That's one of the community networks serving folks in restricted states. And the third is the e-commerce sites that sell pills. So those are what we originally found online and researched and indexed. Those are still happening, and they're as cheap as $40.
Okay.
And that's in stark contrast to an in-clinic medication abortion, which historically has been something like $500, $600. Mm-hmm. So it's, in terms of being an affordable option, we know that it's less reliable, and we know that people have kind of varying experiences
with
those sites.
The pill form is less reliable?
No, sorry.
Oh,
the
okay.
commerce sites.
Oh, I see. Okay, got it. Yeah.
Because you can imagine they're like these pop-up websites to sell the pills. They aren't the same as going to a telehealth provider, but sometimes people prefer it because it's just like a checkout process. They can read all they need to know or talk to a hotline about how to use the pills. They can go on Reddit. They can call the hotline that we refer to for the medical questions is the M&A hotline, which is miscarriage and abortion hotline, which was started in 2019, I think it was, run by incredible providers that are basically the country's experts on self-managed abortion with pills. Mm-hmm. And there's also more peer support hotlines that are very well informed on the process. ReproCare is one that is more like peer-to-peer style, but still has all the information someone would need to be well.
Yeah, so it's accessible and affordable, and there's different variations and ways that you can get it.
Yeah, and the final piece is that there's a legal hotline called Repro Legal Helpline, so that if someone's sitting in one of those states and they do have questions and they do want to feel like, what am I stepping into, right? Yeah. That is, again, we always try to center the end person as we put together information, and so that person gets to figure out what is their actual risk and then make a decision based on their whole situation. Like you're saying, it's like if someone is up against many, many things in their lives and they know that they need to end this pregnancy and move on, they're making that decision based on maybe 10 different factors.
Yeah.
And so we don't assume that we know what those factors are. We just, as researchers, put it all together and help people make an informed decision. So if all went well for that person, if they chose one of those services, they would pay if they needed to pay. They would know approximately how long to wait. The pills would come in the mail. If they come from a telehealth provider, they'd come with instructions. There would also be some sort of a support option if they want to call or they want to text. And then they would go through the process, know what symptoms to watch. Mm-hmm. And again, if they need a follow-up call or text, they could do that either through the hotlines or the provider. And then move on.
That's so great that it's not just like, you know, all right, here's a medication, good luck to you, or a pill. It's all this other support and information. And I think, is there also like, I guess, are the hotlines helping with like mental health stuff? Like not just like physical issues, but also like the shame, the trauma, all that other, the other pieces that come with that?
Yeah, they really are. And again, especially in this current environment, I think that is a large part of how they hold people through the experience. There's also specifically emotional support hotlines. Mm-hmm. I think all options is maybe the best suited for that. So if someone is just first and foremost grappling with the emotion of the decision, they have a specific hotline. So on plancypills.org, we have a whole resources section where we list all these out with a little description so someone knows where they can call.
Yeah, when I think of earlier what you were saying about the stats, it was like they used to say 1 in 4, but you think it's more like 1 in 3 or maybe even more than that. I would think of like my inner circle of, you know, 10 girlfriends. I'm pretty sure like 70-80% of them have had an abortion at some point. A couple of them had like 1 or 2. And I'm not saying they're all super irresponsible, everyone, but like abortions happen for all kinds of reasons. You know, sometimes in my case, I was on a birth control method, didn't work. Some people aren't on birth control methods, and you might be like, oh, they're irresponsible, but like, you know, life happens. Some people are victims of sexual violence. You know, they don't they don't actually have a choice. So I think it's important to take into account all the many reasons why someone might want to end a pregnancy, you know, not want to carry that through. And those are just like, there's things that I didn't, not even listing, that people don't even know of. And one interesting thing I saw recently, I forgot who was saying this, the states, I'm not going to say this perfectly, this, I think, you know, we call them like the red states, but states that have the most, people say like not so progressive when it comes to women's rights, birth control, things like that. Also, though, in those states, the people, let's see, people down, I'm sorry, researching trans porn is more common in those states than the blue states, than the more, you know, more progressive, oh, we're, you know, we support birth control things. And I know that those seem unrelated, but it's in these places where, you know, people think that, you know, they're like supporting this really restrictive way of being in terms of human rights. But then there's like, you know, this, I'm not saying this perfectly eloquently, but like, you know, then there's these, a lot of humans that are interested in things that are different from, you know, the man and the woman, and then they get married and they have the babies and they live happily ever after. And a lot of people have that dream, and they're also very curious or experiencing something outside of that dream. I think more people are experiencing something outside of that dream actually than not.
Oh, and absolutely. I love that you're raising that, because here we are sitting next to your book, Shameless Sex.
Yep.
And we're talking about how do we deprogram those things from the whole experience, mm-hmm. right? We can't leave someone hanging. We can't leave the woman or the gender expansive person hanging at the end of an experience where we've told them all along the way, you get to do what you want. You get to celebrate. Also, life happens and it's mm-hmm. not even maybe always going how you want, right? Yeah. Like you said, there's infinite ways that this can occur. We almost like at Plan C, we don't even get into that. There's mm-hmm. plenty of storytelling orgs and everyone, you know, talking about the various experiences, and we're over here just talking about resources. But I was so grateful to come today because mm-hmm. I absolutely do think that there is a major opportunity to wrap this kind of self-care and option and span of resources into the bigger conversation about how do we reclaim sex, sexual autonomy, connection, like how do we honor all parts of this experience? And mm-hmm. like you're saying, it is hard for some people. There's no oversimplifying of what the abortion experience might mean for someone. Mm-hmm. It gets to be whatever it is, mm-hmm. but the sooner we can kind of wrap it back into our larger conversations about helping people be well, be free, do all the things, mm-hmm. you know, the sooner we'll move toward what I see as a more liberatory yeah. experience.
Mm-hmm. And what, is there anything with what's happening right now? I'm sure the answer is probably yes, but that's happening right now in the, you know, within the politics and sexual politics and human rights in the United States specifically, that is potentially threatening Plan C and people being able, like right now you're saying all these states, it's the thing that is not being targeted when it comes to abortion laws. Are we looking at that in the future? Is it that it might become that?
So what we're looking at in the near future is there's a SCOTUS court case, a Supreme Court case. They're going to hear arguments next Tuesday. We're also looking a little farther into the future at a big election, a mm-hmm. presidential election. Besides that, there's a million tiny little, you know, changes, developments, shifts in the landscape. We like to start with saying, no matter what happens, the pills will be available. Mm-hmm. The sources will change. The way that the telehealth providers can provide care might change. Mifepristone is the medication in question for something like the SCOTUS case, and what the one Texan judge who is driving that case is mm-hmm. trying to do is basically roll it back to pre-2016 mm-hmm. regulations so that you could know that the dispensing would change. It would more specifically require in-person dispensing, and that mm-hmm. would obviously throw a huge wrench in the telehealth.
Yeah.
So that would be chaotic. That mm-hmm. would change the way that those providers could provide, but then you'd still have a few of these other avenues that would keep going. Mm-hmm. The community networks would keep going. The maybe activist providers would keep going. I don't know. It's kind of, a new day where people are, you know, showing up in larger and larger ways to make sure that folks get the access that they need. So absolutely, things will keep changing and it will keep being, unfortunately, chaotic mm-hmm. and creating situations of harm for folks that already experience barriers to care. But we do think that these pills are here to stay
yeah.
and that there will just be what we call creative routes of access that activists, that providers, that organizations are developing to help people get what they need. And mm-hmm. again, there's a lot to learn from the international. There's countries that have been navigating this for decades mm-hmm. in similar ways to what we foresee might be the case in the U.S. And so we don't have to feel like we need to reinvent the wheel. We just need to think a little bit differently about how we show up in community, I would mm-hmm. say, like as kind of a network of people, organizations, committed by this understanding that we need to show up for our fellow mm-hmm. people and yeah. and help ensure the well-being in the face of really draconian, we call them, really yeah. draconian bans,
yeah,
like really rollback kind of wild stuff. Like, I don't know if you've read about the Comstock Act. This is also in yeah. the news recently. This is this like 150-year-old law that was developed by this one guy that might have had his own personal problems with vice suppression. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can read about that too online. And so it was a law that he developed to say that no instruments of vice could be put in the mail. And that applies to all sorts of like medical tools, mm-hmm. like force, like all kinds of things that are used in all kinds of medical procedures that would supposedly be banned from putting in the mail by the Comstock Act, and that's now back on the news. So it's really extreme, but
it's like two steps forward, one step back, and there's certain things that are scary, but I feel safer hearing you say that no matter what, it seems like the pills are here to stay. It just doesn't know what the form will be, the ease of access, and you know, the ways to get the pills, pill forms. And then one other question about other countries. So like, what are some countries that stand out, like that are good role models for what we'd like to see in the U.S. when it comes to supporting these kind of rights?
Yeah, I think in general, Latin America is very inspiring. Mm. Every country is a little different, obviously, but there has been something called the Green Wave that has taken form over the last two decades. And that is basically a solidarity movement of organizations and people working for reproductive rights, access, freedoms. And again, a country like Mexico, I think, is inspiring because they built this network based on a model called an accompaniment, a accompanimento model. It was like women helping women. And it was recognizing this medication, starting with just misoprostol only, which also can effectively end a pregnancy.
That's the first pill?
That's the second.
Okay, got it.
Yep.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So, but it's more common. It's an ulcer medication and it's easier to get. And it's not as restricted, especially here in the States. And so decades ago, and actually that's how this method began. Even that is a really inspiring little story of in the 80s, women in Brazil saw that the indications on this package of misoprostol were that you can't take it while you're pregnant. It was like the pregnant icon with the line through it. And some women who didn't want to be pregnant looked at that and went,
oh, that might help me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And so that's how it spread. At first, it was just word of mouth. Hey, you should know this works. This happens. Take care of yourself. And then they started to take care of each other. And then in Mexico, this Les Libres network is a model of how that became more of an accompaniment network, meaning that there was actually a system of texts and chats and women, people volunteering after they had their experience to join the network and help others and kind of pay it forward and get trained and get informed. And again, that's sort of the empowering nature of this whole thing is that there's certain things you need to know, but you can get trained up and then fully understand this protocol and then become kind of an agent for spreading information. And the information is so powerful right now. So I think looking to countries like Mexico, there's a great book that I just read that we're actually quoted in many times from my co-founder. And it's called Abortion Beyond the Law by an author named Naomi Brain. It's so compelling because, again, it sort of grounds this whole thing in a larger historical trend. I'm really appreciating these days books. There's many that I can send you after if you want to add anything to the notes, but there's many books out there that ground some of these gender-related issues in the longer history of persecution of witches, for example, or the way that women were treated throughout history and how that shows up in modern society. It's like same thing taking different forms. And so that's really compelling to me. That's really helpful to me because if I can disentangle it from the heated politics of the moment, I can see it from a little bit of a distance and I can see how, this is just, it's just the same story that unfortunately we haven't totally cracked open yet.
Yeah. And it seems also unfortunate. I mean, I support anyone who identifies as a religious person, no matter what your religion is. My huge issue is when your religion somehow affects everyone else around you and how you perceive how they should live their life. Or when a religion becomes a part of politics that didn't even need religion in it. Pretty sure the United States was designed to not have religion necessarily. Like that was kind of the intention, right? But anyway, so like that. And just want to really advocate for and urge people to ask yourself when you are really uncomfortable with someone else's choices, how they want to live their life. Granted, if it's harmful to the world, then, you know, that's a thing. It's a safety issue. But, you know, if someone is, you know, they need to take an abortion pill, or, you know, they want to, I don't know, wear rainbows all the time, or, you know, they're someone who identifies as trans, right? Like, how is that your problem? A lot of people it becomes their problem, whether because they're uninformed or uncomfortable or because of your beliefs. It's not always religion, right? But often it is. There's this something like, you know, these undertones even that are hanging out there. I mean, even for me in certain aspects of my life, I will realize that there's certain things that I've
believed or even said that had religion in it, even though I wasn't raised in religion, because it's just, it's been here for a long time and kind of like seeping in. So I just want to really invite people to, like, if you're, when you feel uncomfortable with something, like maybe this conversation right now, you know, I think a good question is, you know, why? And, you know, why is this uncomfortable for me? What perspectives, stories do I have around this? Where did those come from? And it's okay to feel discomfort about things. It's okay to judge, right? Like all humans, we judge things. This is what we do. It's what we do with that, you know, to the outside world. And I think it's always interesting when people are like, not into certain things like, say, abortion, because they feel like it somehow is harmful, right? It's harming whatever, the children or the person's body. But then the way that people are handling their opinions about that harm are harmful too. It's like you want to teach a kid not to hit, but you hit them. It doesn't really make sense. So instead, I think the way is education and informing yourself. And, you know, if something's not your jam, it doesn't have to be your jam. You know, there's plenty of other things that could be your jam and you can tune it out. But yeah, or like the people when I've actually this happened when I went to go get an abortion. 2016. I make it so casual. Went to go get an abortion, but you know they only do it on Saturdays. And I don't know if anyone has seen. Have you seen this too? Like outside of Planned Parenthood on a Saturday mm-hmm. when it's abortion day, and there's at least like you know 5 to 10 people, or maybe sometimes there's like only 2 or 3, with their signs picketing. They're almost all over 60, by the way. They're all white. And I'm like, why the fuck are you here right now? Like, what are you doing here at 8 a.m. right now? Don't you have something better to do with your day? It's infuriating to the point where I'll like drive by there and see that. And I'll be like, I'm like honking my horn, flipping them off. And I'm like, I'm doing the thing that I'm saying I shouldn't be doing right now. Like the thing that's like, you know, using my anger in this way. Anyways, mm-hmm. this is so many tangents there. But mm-hmm. If you're one of those people, you're probably not listening to Shameless Sex. or you wouldn't be listening to this episode.
So. Or if you are, that's exciting. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I think that, we have a chance to practice trusting that every individual knows what's best for them.
Yeah.
Right. It's, mm-hmm. I think that what's compelling also about working on abortion is that I would say in some ways it has elements of being an unanswerable question, mm-hmm. right? I'm not going to sit here and try to answer the question for anyone else mm-hmm. about exactly when does life begin? What, mm-hmm. you know, the depth of that kind of spiritual conversation.
Totally.
I think that is there too. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I'm not saying that isn't there.
Yeah.
That exists. And we know from vast numbers, experience, et cetera, that there are this portion of the population that are always going to keep getting pregnant and mm-hmm. can't, don't want, need mm-hmm. to end the pregnancy. It's just how it is.
It's the dawn of time.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it used to be that the doulas and the witches and the grandmas would help. And now it's been medicalized because mm-hmm. of the way that things developed again, about 150 years ago with mm-hmm. my understanding of the history is that white male OBGYN saw an opportunity to take this as a service they mm-hmm. could charge for. Mm-hmm. So they took it back.
Capitalism. And, yes. Mm-hmm. Used to be just like doulas and witchy people working with herbs from the earth. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people look at pharmaceuticals and they're like, oh, you know, it's not natural. Yes, it's a synthesized in a lab, but it's generally based on ingredients or contains ingredients that are natural in the earth. Like there's all kinds of pharmaceuticals outside of abortion pills, like ones that some of you all listening are probably taking that are based on actual plants and things that are here. It's just like, you know, we've gone to a different direction since the doula days of like, oh, this herb works for this. And how much more safer is it then that we, I mean, or this isn't exactly the question. I think mm-hmm. it sounds way safer than, oh yeah, if you go out to the farm over there, you can take these 5 herbs and you can have an abortion, but you don't know like how, you know, what, which herbs, how much of them you should take. Sounds a lot less safer than, like, you know, here's something that we've worked on for a long time that is as safe as we have been able to get it, but it's far safer than that.
Yeah. And thank goodness it is, mm-hmm. right? Like, thank goodness this medication is so safe. Mm-hmm. It's night and day different than how people who worked on abortion access around the time of Roe saw mm-hmm. things, like the Jane movement 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, that was
I was listening to a podcast on that, the Janes uh-huh. and these women who were doing underground abortions.
Yeah.
And actually, I remember when I was listening to it, they were like, you know, one of the women saying it's actually not that hard to do, but it wasn't a pill form that they were doing.
Yeah.
But like, if we,
they learned it.
Yeah, they'd learned it themselves. These are not even doctors, mm-hmm. or not some of them were, I'm sure, but like not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So thank goodness that there is this safe and effective method that lets people take it back. And I think that in terms of, yeah, these questions of what I put in my body or how I think about pharmaceuticals, things like that. Again, it really just comes down to the decision that someone needs mm-hmm. to make for themselves in that moment. The thing, and I've talked about this with many friends, many people, especially like folks in the wellness space. It's like the thing about this method is that you're not taking it all the time.
Yeah.
It's not harmful for your body. It does have side effects and mm-hmm. has the experience of cramping and bleeding and all that, but you're taking it, you know, when you have to take it.
Viagra has side effects. Sometimes people have heart attacks, I'm pretty sure.
It's so safer than Viagra, statistically speaking. It's safer than Viagra. So
yeah.
I know. It's it's all again kind of relaxing and deprogramming ourselves from what we've been told mm-hmm. about what this is mm-hmm. and allowing a new paradigm. We talk about this as a paradigm shift. It's really like thinking of abortion as something that's part of a broader mm-hmm. experience of having a uterus in this lifetime, right? You're on this long journey and at some point you might need this. At some point you might need that. Mm-hmm. At some point you might want to get pregnant. At some point you definitely don't want to be pregnant. And so we're all about having all these options available mm-hmm. and also in a dignified way. We talk in this movement about dignity mm-hmm. and that people deserve to have dignity as they make these decisions.
Yeah.
And the reproductive justice movement is a movement that was originated by Black women decades ago. And their recognition was we can't just fight for abortion. Mm-hmm. We actually have to fight for all the things. We have to fight for the right to be pregnant, the mm-hmm. right to not be pregnant, and the right to raise families in the way that we want to raise them.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So what do you think, because we'll wrap up this episode now, but I assume since you're a nonprofit, right? So people, one, I mean, we'll have all this in the show notes, everyone. If you're like, I need to get Plan C or want to learn more about this, we'll have the information there. And you already talked about that as well a little bit. And what about people wanting to donate to the cause? Because I know nonprofits could always use donations.
Thank you for asking. Yeah, we are a 501c3 fiscally sponsored initiative. And there's all the information on our website to get a tax receipt for your donation.
Yeah.
And the other way that you can support is just by sharing this information. Mm-hmm. We have resources on the website. We have stickers that you can post around town. You can post on social media. You can text or email to your friends. But really, so many people still don't know about these options, just mm-hmm. like we started this conversation. And the name of the game is just getting the word out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So will you give us a reminder again, everyone, this will be in the show notes, but of the website where people can learn more, all the things.
Yep. It's plancpills.org and social media handles are at plancpills. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
that's easy.
Yeah. And the rest is on there. We list a lot of these resources on our website, and we also list ways that you can give to abortion funds mm-hmm. that are funding people who need access in restricted states. So there's a way to also fund pills through mm-hmm. our website, linking out to the other funds that are doing that work.
I always just sent money to Planned Parenthood, which I still completely stand by, and I won't stop doing that. But I'm like, this one seems like a little more hopeful.
Yeah, we work with Planned Parenthood. They link off to us, but they can't do abortions in most of those states. That's the conversation we've been having with folks. It's like, this is a new landscape that's developing. So there's ways to support in new ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing all this and for reaching out to me. This is because Amy also lives here in Santa Cruz and saw April 9, the cover of The Good Times. And she was like, hey, I'm here too. And so I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited to, I know for a lot of people, like, well, you're excited to talk about abortion, but I find it one fascinating, and it's partially selfish because my job at Shameless Sex is I get free sex ed all the time. And so if I'm like, there's a topic that I want to learn about, I'm like, yeah, let's book that because, you know, so yes, you're welcome everyone for Amy's selfishness and for other Amy's gift of sharing all this with us. Amy, thank you so much for taking the time today and for all the work that you do. And everyone who's listening, if you have some extra funds and you're passionate about this, go donate or just keep Plan C in mind in case you need that, or maybe you want to order some now and just have it there. Like I read your article, mm-hmm. like I keep Plan C in my medicine cabinet. And I think that's really smart. So
Yeah. So thank you to Amy and thank you to our listeners. And this is another bonus episode. And we will see you again, as April would say, next Tuesday, because that's what we do. We release an episode every Tuesday. We have since June 2017, and sometimes on Friday. If you have not checked out our book, Shameless Sex, the book, go check it out. We are very proud of it, and it is your guide to becoming the sexual being that you already are, but maybe you didn't know you are or would like to be. And what else? That's it. Okay, that's my plugs. Have a lovely, well, this is Friday, whatever day you're listening to this, we love you, and ciao for now.
Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com, and for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use coupon code ShamelessSex at purepleasureshop.com.